Roundtable Osteuropa. Ein Podcast des Zentrums für Osteuropa und internationale Studien. So welcome to the Zeus podcast. This week we are going to talk about Moldova and the parliamentary elections. So the Republic of Moldova will hold parliamentary elections next week on the 28th of September. And it is considered a crucial election for this EU accession candidate. There was an election already last year in Moldova. That was the presidential election where President Maia Sandu won by a margin against her contender. And already then there were strong concerns about the way that actors linked with Russia were interfering with this election and destabilizing the election process. Moldova was also a strong target for disinformation campaigns, and observers have called that they see the classical Moscow playbook there of intimidation and obstruction. So a lot of things to unpack and discuss here for this specific election, what the situation in Moldova is. And I have invited two guests, Anastasia Pociumban and Nadia Douglas. Hello and welcome at Zeus Roundtable.
Hello.
Hi.
Thank you.
So Anastasia is a research fellow at the German Council of Foreign Relations, DGAP, since April 2022. And Anastasia, you also lead the Eastern Partnership Think Tank Network, right? So that means you have a lot of contact with a lot of think tanks and political experts all over the region. Your research focuses on the impact of Russia's full-scale war in Ukraine on the EU Eastern neighborhood. So Ukraine, Moldova, Georgia, Armenia, and Azerbaijan. So I think this makes you a perfect guest for today. And Nadia Douglas is a researcher at Zeus. At the moment, she is working in a project on OSCE at the SWP. And as a colleague, I know your research on interaction between state and society already worked on Moldova. And since then, in your other projects on conflict resolution and security and insecurity, Moldova was always present. So we are also very grateful to have your perspective.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here.
So let's start for everybody who's not following Moldovan politics on a daily basis. Who are the contenders for this election? Who is running? Which parties are in the picture here?
Thank you. I guess I'll start, Nadia, feel free to come in. I think I will focus on the parties that also most likely, parties and coalitions that are most likely to go through, to pass the threshold. So first and foremost, we have the governing party called Party of Action and Solidarity, PAS, which also from where the current president, Maia Sandu, is. Then we also have a new actor, so to say, on the arena. This is the Alternativa Bloc. Alternativa Bloc was formed earlier this year, and it consists of four parties, including the incumbent mayor of Chisinau, Ion Ceban, then also the former presidential candidate and prosecutor general Alexandru Stoianoglu and his party, then also the former prime minister and leader of Party of Development and Consolidation of Moldovan party, Ion Chicu, as well as a fourth party led by Marc Căciuc, who's a former MP and also leader of a party. Marc Căciuc has also been working previously very closely with the Communist Party. And Alternativa is relatively new, and the polls also predict, I think we'll talk about this later a little bit, but it appeared this year on the electoral arena. Then we also have a socialist communist bloc, patriot bloc, which is formed by the communist and socialist parties. And I would say they are the most pro-Russian, perhaps, so to say, bloc in this election, since most of Ilan Shor-affiliated parties have been prevented to run. And then we also have a party of Renato Usatăi. Renato Usatăi is a, if I may say so, a populist politician. He has been present in the Moldovan political landscape now for quite some years. And according to most of the polls, his party is also likely to pass the threshold. I think it would be important to mention that many of the associated parties with the oligarch in exile, Ilan Shor, have been blocked for running for elections, particularly the Victory Bloc has been not allowed to register, especially due to their connection with the Ilan Shor that is under international sanctions and under Moldovan also criminal investigation. And according to the Moldovan electoral legislation, people who have been closely affiliated with him and with his parties cannot be running for elections. And this has significantly altered also the potential electoral landscape.
Yes, thanks for presenting the whole tableau. I might just add a few bits here and there. So first of all, I would say this campaign is, or Moldova in general, is now really under pressure from many sides, and this is unprecedented. Most obviously from Russia, but also from the West, I would say, and I mean here also mostly Romania, that is trying to interfere in these elections. So both, for example, George Simion, but also the president, Nicolae Ciolacu, they repeatedly addressed the Moldovan electorate at any possible occasion and trying to tell them to go to the polls and more or less also who to vote for. So I believe this is kind of unprecedented. And they also have, for example, this far-right movement of George Simion and Georgescu. They also have two parties actually running. That's the Alliance for Union of Romanians and the Democracy at Home Party. But these parties are unlikely to really obtain many votes. There is a steady share of about 20% of Moldovans who support these unionist ideas and the reunification with Romania. But because they are actually more interested in joining the EU faster with becoming part of Romania and to be protected from Russia, and their ideas are not that Romania and Moldova should become Eurosceptics and align with Trump or with Putin. I would say, yeah, these are additions to the party system. We have also the former oligarch Plahotniuc parties that tried to register. One of them managed to do. That's the Party of European Social Democrats. Obviously also spoiler party already by its name. So these are old oligarchic parties under new guise. It's unclear whether they will actually manage to overcome the threshold. On the pro-European bloc, let me just add that PAS is really on its own. And this is also kind of deplorable because it would have been good for the party system to be more pluralistic in the sense that there are other forces out there that are pro-European, but in these elections, they're mostly spoilers. And they're trying to hit on PAS for very diverse motives. PAS is dominating the pro-EU camp, and this is problematic because they have domestic problems. They haven't performed as many have expected during the past 4 years, but we can come to talk about that later. Yeah, about the sovereignists, the patriotic bloc, you already said they are traditionally pro-Russian parties. Their argument or their campaign runs mostly on that the country should remain sovereign, whatever they understand by this, but they favor close relations with Russia, and they put on their agenda mostly those bread and butter topics. So the importance of cheap Russian energy, the maintenance of the neutrality status, etc. But they're not really explaining where high prices come from, and they're excluding basically the crisis topics. And by being flanked by Russian propaganda, they obviously really have a susceptible electorate that that will cast their vote for them.
Mm-hmm. Okay, if I just may very briefly add, I forgot to mention that we have 23 parties or candidates running for these elections, and about 30 to 40% of voters are undecided how will they vote. So I think that also makes these elections very unpredictable. I mean, elections should normally be unpredictable as it's a democratic exercise, but I think what we also discussed previously, it's again another crucial election for Moldova, and there is the high sense of insecurity or how this will turn out. And I think also it's interesting what Nadia mentioned about PAS being the only really pro-European candidate. There've been a big discussion also on social media with another blog, which is called Napreuna Together, that they want to ask PAS whether they would run in a blog, and PAS has refused that. And in the past, PAS has also really did not cooperate with the other pro-European parties for also local elections or supported candidates from the other parties, but has been on its own mostly.
Yeah, you made a very important point there with the undecided electorate. In some of the polls, that's almost one third of the respondents. And regrettably, this is a long tradition in Moldova, and it really shows the political disillusionment and the general mistrust of the population in the ruling class, and also in particular in the Chisinau elites. So there is quite obviously a lack of charismatic political figures that people could identify with. And this has already been quite pronounced in the 2019 parliamentary elections and 2021 as well, and during the local elections. And I think this is going to be really an issue during these elections as well. We can later discuss the chances or the options or scenarios these undecided voters could go for. But
yeah, let's talk about this later, look at the options and perspectives for the future in a minute. But before that, I would like to come back to the question of destabilization and interference. So you already mentioned that this election seems to be very important for actors on the outside, and especially Russia has been accused of interfering with the election, destabilizing Moldova. There's always, I think, in the West, this idea of disinformation campaigns going around, but it's a little bit more than that. Can you explain what a destabilization in this case means? Anastasia, do you want to start?
Okay, I can start, sure. I think, like, first, when we look at the last year's EU referendum, that was a particular target of the destabilization and informational interference, but not only. Russia is also using energy blackmailing, economic blackmailing, and cyber attack, as well as disruptions of elections, like potential threats of bomb alerts at the embassies. For example, this is a high risk. So last year's referendum, EU referendum, was a high target. And in the end, referendum has passed, but with a narrow percentage of 50.35%. Experts estimate that between 6 and 8% of voters were sort of lost due to the Russian interference and voter buying campaigns. There have been very sophisticated schemes orchestrated through Telegram channels, and it worked really in a way like a pyramid scheme. You know, like you bring people, the more people you bring, the more money you get, and for every vote, every potential interested person, you get additional money, and they are being channeled through Russian banks. This year, I believe that was also like a test ground for also this year's elections, and now these campaigns have exacerbated already from the beginning of the year. We have seen increased disinformation, deep fakes, and also cyber attacks. I think by June this year, the number of cyber attacks has surpassed the total number of cyber attacks in the last 3 years. Or cyber attack attempts, So we can also expect that during the electoral date, attempts to destabilize election, to question the legitimacy of election, to say that elections have been manipulated by the Kremlin actors. And then there has been a high inflow of illicit funding. And if last year that was happening also through cash, or as I said, like Russian banks, this year we also see cryptocurrency being very much involved in this, and that's much harder to stop. And I think a new trend also comparing to last year is the use of TikTok. So TikTok is now the second most popular channel after YouTube, according to some of the polls from where people get the information. And I find that and the Moldovan police, the government authorities have been also cooperating with the TikTok to close some of the channels, but they seem to be spreading faster than they managed to close them. And there are schemes also through that start on Telegram and then spread through the other social media like Facebook and TikTok to basically promote pro-Russian narratives. It's also a lot of deepfakes and AI generating videos, focusing on narratives such that the EU is spoiled, that Moldova is, by joining the EU, is also getting into a war with Russia. It's also about normative perception of traditional values, and also accusing PAS and specifically Maia Sandu of corruption. That's also one of the main messages. And also what I find interesting is the use of church Last mm-hmm. year, around 500 clerics were trained by Russia, by Kremlin forces, to basically spread disinformation. And they also got trainings into how to organize Telegram channels and also how to organize offline activities. And I have had a look. You can find on Telegram channels of most of like local municipalities, and they spread usual information about religious holidays, but then they also engage in offlines.
Is an enormous campaign. What are the most divisive topics there?
Can I just add also yeah. a few points on that? Because Anastasia already mentioned the vote buying. I don't know if this is going to be as extensive again as it was during the presidential elections last year. But Sandu herself in 2024, she said that approximately 140,000 people in the first round of the presidential elections were actually victims of vote buying. And if you look at the population, at a population of 2.5 million, that's about 8 to 10% of the electorate. Yeah. Of course, this time again, diaspora will be decisive because diaspora voters are not as much victim of Russian propaganda and disinformation campaigns. Maybe one more remark on the disinformation. Nastya already mentioned the Russian energy blackmail and the whole topic of energy and the prices. But this is all being instrumentalized by the pro-Russian camp, the inflation and the threat of war, obviously, as well. They say, yeah, if we are closer to Russia, then we won't face the same destiny as Ukraine. But also there are many myths about EU accession floating around the social media. Once Moldova would become a member of the European Union, then there would be a selling of the lands, of properties to rich European investors. Then there would be an inflow of illegal migrants. There's very many myths about that. And then I wanted to mention also how intricate this whole disinformation or information warfare has become. The other day I read a post by David Smith from Moldova Matters. It's quite an interesting news digest commented by him. And he mentioned all these social media news platforms that have been created by the Shore Network, such as Moldova 24, which has become quite popular and has been blocked now. But these are like, how would you say, like they have so many arms and mirror sites that keep those copies online of these channels. And then he mentioned also the instrument of black propaganda with Shore Network sites popping up in Spanish, French, German, other languages. For example, there's a German site called Kanzler Daddy, Chancellor Daddy, which has its own set of social media accounts related to Shore. And then another thing is that he mentioned an investigative report by Deskide that was published on Ilan Shore's efforts to broaden Russian propaganda campaigns and allegedly disguising the attempts by the FSB, the Russian FSB, to identify a large amounts of money allocated to influence Moldovan politics among the members of Shore's network. And he asked himself, why did the Moldovan media did not pick this up? Because this was kind of a real revelatory scandal. But it became quite obvious that some pieces of this investigation were real. There were members of the Shore Network, indeed, probably being investigated by the FSB, but other pieces were probably fabricated. So the whole investigation, he assumed, could be not so credible and targeted or really initiated on purpose to threaten, actually, also members of the Shore Network to remain loyal to those that influence them. So that I found that quite interesting. So this is really going around a lot of corners and becoming more and more complicated to understand.
So why does Russia target Moldova in this way? Why is Moldova for years, you already said, target of these interference campaigns? And why does it sometimes also prove successful with a part of the electorate?
I think Moldova has been always a target of Russian disinformation and hybrid operations, but it has really increased since Russia's full-scale invasion in Ukraine. I think this is what makes this election crucial, because stakes are high for everyone. Stakes are high for Moldova, stakes are high for the EU's credibility, and stakes are very high for Russia. Russia, in a way, has seen Moldova as part of its sphere of influence, as part of this gray zone of former Soviet Union and this Russian Empire. And since the start of Russia's full-scale war in Ukraine, Moldova has also managed, in a way, to decouple from Russian influence, from its, for instance, energy is a field where Moldova has been totally dependent on Russian energy. And as well as economically, there was a lot of trade with Russia, which has also been reduced now significantly. Most of Moldovan trade is now with the European Union. And what's interesting, I think, even the trade from the Transnistrian region, about 80% of it is also with the EU. So in a way, this also created this rupture with Russia as a paternal state, if I may say so. And for Russia, this election is also a chance to block Moldova's EU accession and keep the country in its sphere of influence, and as well to use it further as the testing ground for hybrid tools and for destabilization. Also, I think having unstable Moldova is also in the interest of Russia in order to continue its war in Ukraine. I mean, I think that's also seen in this way. And on the other hand, for the Moldovan government, that's also seen as a chance to further rupture this relationship and move ahead into the EU. Moldova is completing now its screening process for the EU accession. Moldova has become an EU candidate country, and now it's really moving for this EU course. And therefore, if you have a very unstable or volatile government, this will just prevent this reform process. And on the other hand, I think for the EU, the stakes are also very high, because EU has invested a lot in Moldova. EU has supported Moldova financially, both with the growth plan of 1.9 billion, but also with its support to energy system and also against hybrid threats. And I think we can't really compare Moldova and Georgia, but you know, after Georgia's full, like, if I can say so, state capture by the Georgian Dream Party, you also have not so many success cases in the EU's eastern neighborhood. And I feel Moldova, the EU is really trying to support Moldova and to also play this geopolitical actor, to show its geopolitical actorness and to anchor Moldova's democratic transformation. So that's what makes this election so crucial, because I think if you have a government which is more pro-Russian, in a way this backsliding can easily happen.
But I wouldn't say that a pro-Russian government, as some portray it, wouldn't represent the population. Because why does Russia really target Moldova in that way? It's probably also because they know that in Moldova, other than in countries like Ukraine or Georgia, there is a certain percentage of the population that still feels these cultural close ties with Russia. So there is a lot at stake, and I would agree that this is it's a election on geopolitical choices, but it's not all. Mm-hmm. So obviously from a European strategic point of view, it's very important. But when I also realize when I read or I see reports from the Moldovan regions that for the ordinary citizens, it's still about change, about reforms, about reforms to be successful, but also about their individual perspectives, that their lives not constantly deteriorate and that they feel entitled to actually expect more. But what they really expect is not much good from the elections, no matter how the results are in the end. So at the end of the day, I would say a large number of Moldovans, they just don't want to ruin their relations with Russia. That doesn't mean that they are supporting the Russian aggression or the war in Ukraine, and it doesn't mean that they're opponents to closer relations with the EU. But already the presidential elections last year and the referendum have shown that if it hadn't been for the diaspora, of course, I mean, there are all these other factors, vote buying, disinformation and so on, but then Maya Sandu wouldn't have won, and also the referendum wouldn't have gone through. So if push comes to shove and the choice is EU or Russia, a considerable amount of people, they would just say, despite the due to the threatening Russian propaganda on top, due to the vote buying, but also from their conviction that they would not vote for the pro-European course. It's probably a deep-seated fear to be taken out of the Russian orbit. So I wouldn't say that it's agreeing with Russia, but fearing to leave, to be uprooted from their cultural upbringing, more or less.
Yeah, I think also, I think it's what you mentioned is also relates to the fact that the picture is much more complex than the EU and Russia. And I think when you look at the polls in Moldova, the first main concerns for Moldovans is corruption, poverty, then low income, and then also jobs, inflation, economic problems. So these are like the first concerns. And I think also this idea that Moldova has previously, or like the path that Moldova has previously had, juggling these relations with Russia and the EU and trying to take, you know, cheap gas from here and maybe infrastructure investment from the EU, and people still believe that it's possible, or some of them. And I think this is being amplified by the Russian disinformation narratives that poverty is also linked somehow to not having Russia around. And that's why I also would say that this economic reform should be a priority really for the next Moldovan government, because it's much easier to buy voters when people are ready to sell their vote for 50 euros, and that's an amount good enough. So it also shows that population is relatively poor. There is a big divide between regions and big cities. Jobs are missing also regionally. And I think perhaps this government realized too late that they need to outreach to also population which lives in rural areas, yeah. Mm-hmm. And take them on board with the EU accession, because I don't think everyone really understands what it means to be in the EU and what are the benefits of the EU accession. They have not been tangible for an average citizen in Moldova. I mean, Moldova is part now of this Roam Like at Home, which means roaming, and also is joining the single European payment area. But this is, I'm not sure this really translates into concrete benefits for a person living in a village somewhere in the north of Moldova. And therefore, these people are being targeted very, especially targeted by these pro-Russian actors.
I absolutely agree with you that PAS has simply failed to reach out to the structurally weak regions, especially to Gagauzia. I mean, we see now also, despite the fact that Bashkan Gutsul has been sentenced and it has been proven that the illicit party funding for a shore network and so on, the Gagauzians are still behind it. They're steady on their pro-Russian orientation. And PAS failed also to make their reforms more visible. I mean, of course, many of the reforms have been stagnating, and also the justice reform has been painfully slow. But they should have made the reform process more tangible to the population and explain why there has been this stagnation due to the multiple crises. Of course, I mean, everyone knows the war started in 2022. There was the refugee crisis. There was the energy crisis, the Russian blackmailing. There was the problem with the Transnistrian de facto elites. On the other hand, they have invested so much in the education system. They have rebuilt or constructed new hospitals. They have invested much into the infrastructure. And it's something that the rural populations profit from, the road construction and digitization. You can do so much now in Moldova digitally. You get a digital driver license, ID. So there are assets, there are results they could be proud of, but the population isn't aware of it, and that's a problem.
Thank you for addressing all these things that really are the concerns of the voters also, because it's not always exactly the same as the role that it plays maybe in the EU strategy, but of course it's connected. What scenarios are there now for the election? What's at stake internally? Because Anastasia, you already explained why the election is crucial for the EU, and EU leaders have also done a lot to support the current government. But what yeah, what is at stake for Moldova internally?
Maybe I can start. One more thing I wanted to mention is also we have touched upon this topic, but hate speech has become a real problem also for the Moldovan society and the consequences of the disinformation. It actually shows quite well how the destabilization can actually affect also the political results. So there has been the Promolex organization that is always publishing pre-electoral reports on various topics that are important to the elections. And they, for example, reported now a number of 233 cases of hate speech, incitement to discrimination and other forms of intolerance in the pre-campaign period. And that is actually a sharp increase compared to the 2021 parliamentary elections. And it's interesting to see that people get discriminated against because of their political affiliation, professional activity. Just to give you an example, there are judges that have been on the panel of the Gutsul, the Bashkan Gutsul case, have actually been threatened. They have received death threats. There were even press releases that were announcing the death of this judge, Anna Kucherescu, who was on the trial of Bashkan Gutsul. But also health, sex, gender, nationality, age, ethnicity, religion. And this is something that we don't only see in Moldova. We see it everywhere, that hate speech is becoming more and more crucial. And I want to cite also an extract from this Promolex report by former President Igor Dodon, an important candidate of the Patriotic Bloc. He actually threatened in several speeches to use physical force against the opponents from the PAS party and literally said, "We'll drag them out of the president's office and out of the parliament by their necks and ears." Mm. So this is quite obviously a reminder also of precedent cases, storming of the Capitol in D.C., Washington, D.C. in 2021, the storming of the Congress in Brasilia in 2023. And candidates like Dodon pick up on this rhetoric of this far-right populist rhetoric that Trump is an example for. Yeah, so this is something we can observe now in Moldova as well.
I would add also, coming back to your question also, on the stakes and maybe the way forward. I also sometimes wonder how much the current government could have achieved if we wouldn't have also this continuous Russian interference. And it's very hard to say because we have to remember that this government also has limited Moldovan government system in general has slightly limited administrative capacity. The new government has adopted also, not new, the current government has adopted the public administration reform, which is now being implemented, but it's not yet there. So, you know, we also, keeping all of this in mind, this limited capacity and overstretching that has been there, we have to remember that there was also the energy crisis, the refugee crisis, the economic crisis, and there has been also a government reshuffle 1 year and a half after Natalia Gavrilitsa government. So I think overall it's also a very tough environment to pursue reforms. It's always hard to tell what would be like, how to do it best, because sometimes I also wonder maybe what could have been done differently. And I think as we discussed, this reaching out regionally is important. And looking forward, I think, again, a lot will depend also on the diaspora vote. But this year, diaspora has also been targeted by disinformation campaigns, as Nadia also mentioned, by media in different EU countries. And the main message is that the current PAS government is corrupt. I think that's been the main narrative. And it also seeks to undermine the Moldovan government and institutions among its Western partners. But I think I would like to hope that this would be maybe the last crucial elections, you know, in Moldova, and Moldova can sustain its EU path. And we didn't really talk yet about the whole parties, but I think it's very unlikely that PAS, even if they win elections, they will not have the majority probably in the government, and then they will have to form a coalition. And to me, the question would be how also this coalition can continue the EU reforms and how the EU can engage also with the Moldovan government, if it's in a coalition or maybe even if it's not only PASS, because the EU has supported very much PASS, and in a way PASS has also created this association as being the sole pro-EU party. And I think that also risks to undermine the EU when there is a different coalition. The EU both in Moldova, but also for the cooperation between the European Union and the Moldovan authorities.
Yeah, and then coming back also to the undecided voters, I mean, there are also various scenarios that majority maybe doesn't go to vote, or that they become protest voters, yeah, despite not being pro-Russian, just to punish PASS for not having delivered on their promises and reforms. Or, yeah, there are different scenarios, but I worry that when PASS doesn't get the absolute majority, then they will be forced to go into a coalition. And the question, who are likely or likable coalition partners? At first glance, there are none. At second glance, okay, there could be Osati, but he is unpredictable as well. He has let down Maia Sandu previously during the runoff of the presidential election, so not someone to count on. And then there could be a minority government, yes, consisting of PASS, the alternatives under Osati, but that would be very unstable. And then what I fear most is a grand coalition of the oppositionist parties that would form a coalition against the PASS, and that would be obviously a pro-Russian coalition, but it's not to be ruled out that this is happening.
I think I may be a bit more optimistic. I'm not optimistic in general. I think it's also, I also can imagine that, for instance, Alternativa can split once they enter the parliament, because these four parties have very little in common. And maybe PASS could also form a coalition with Ion Ceban party. I mean, again, depending on the votes.
Yeah, Ion Ceban was the only one who actually voted pro at the referendum, pro-EU, yeah. But, I mean, his background is also unclear, how close his ties are with Russia or not, yeah.
Because also now when you look at the polls, I feel we have these pro-Russian parties, but parties that really advocate with very close relations with Russia are becoming less popular. So I think there might also not be, well, no one knows, but I think these parties rather advocate for EU relations and EU funding, even if they have this more pro-Russian agenda, but deeply pro-Russian coalition. Yeah, I'm not sure it will be like Alternativa and Usate would do it.
Yeah, I'm not so sure. At least it would be quite unstable coalition as well. And what I rule out also is that any of these parties would go together with Plahotniuk's party, because that would discredit them.
Thank you. So with that look into the future, we want to close here. Thank you very much, Nadia and Anastasia. And you will know what to look out for when you see the election results from Moldova coming up on your screens. And I hope to have you around for the next time of the ZEUS Roundtable. Goodbye.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.